The language was only unified in 1972. It's only basically within my lifetime that this has been considered to be a unified language, which is why there isn't very much consensus about what is right and wrong. Unlike in English, where there's a whole worldwide industry based on what correct grammar is and what an IELTS score looks like and what materials can be used to teach the third conditional or whatever. I'm here if you
so choose to lose. Hey there, this is Steph from StephFruccio.com with another episode of Geopat's Language. We are traveling to Albania, Kosovo, and the UK today to chat with an educator, community advocate, and author about Albanian and other languages in the region. I will tell you more about her in a minute, but first I want to mention one quick thing. As many of you know, Geopat's Language is one of many podcasts that I have in the Geopat's Podcast Network. In order to have one singular place where all of the information from not just all the podcasts, but podcast review day and where you can read about all of the different parts of my podcasting world, I have created a weekly newsletter that comes out on Thursdays. I'll put a link to the most current issue in the show notes for you, and you can go and sign up at stephfuccio.com. It comes out on Thursdays. It talks about my creative process as well as product, has some inspiration, some tips, and some, you know, struggles, because creativity, it's not always so easy. In this conversation, I had the pleasure of chatting with Elizabeth Gowing. She was a primary educator in Inner London before moving to Kosovo in 2006. And from there, she moved to Albania in 2013. And that's where I am right now. I'm in the capital of Albania, which is Tirana. And it is on one of the expat boards for Tirana that I actually met Elizabeth and started to talk about having this interview. In Kosovo, she co-founded a number of different projects, community projects, like the Ideas Partnership nonprofit. We'll talk about her community work more during this conversation. She is also the author of 5 travel books and has also translated 2 books from Albanian. We chat about all these different aspects of her life in the Balkans, which is the region that Kosovo, Albania, and some other countries are in, to language. We anchor them to language and we investigate them through the lens of language. And it was really, really fun to look at the language differences, the language cultural lessons, and so much more grounded in those language moments. If you would like to comment on this episode, I'd love to hear what you think. On Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, I am Steph Fuccio. It's StephFuccio. And that is also my email address and my website address, StephFuccio.com. All right, let's get into the conversation with Elizabeth and the many ways that she has learned, viewed, and experienced language within the region that I'm in now. Your body blues. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for being on Geopat's Language Podcast.
It's a pleasure.
On all of the Geopat's podcasts, we try to encourage a global lens on things. So can we start out with all of the places that you have been, either for short or longer periods of time in your life?
Well, I think I've been to 65 countries, so maybe we won't do all of them.
Wow, okay. Maybe we should talk regions then.
Well, my father was in the Air Force, the Royal Air Force, and so I lived as a child in Germany and in Belgium and in Algeria. And then as an adult, I've lived in Kosovo, which is where I still spend most of my time, and in Albania, which is where I was spending a lot of my time with my partner's job until August this year. And then the UK, which is where I'm from. So I guess my travel has been not at all in South America, never been to South America at all, and a little bit in Asia, but far more of it in Europe and then some countries of Africa as well.
And are you in Albania now or in Kosovo now?
I'm actually in the UK now. I arrived 2 days ago. Yeah. We don't have a home in Albania anymore. Since August, we left our flat there because my partner's job finished. So although we've actually been back a few times and we've seen a few friends, and I hope and I'm sure that that will continue. And my partner has some work there and I'm on the board of a nonprofit there. And so there are things that will keep us connected to Albania in some ways. But having tried for 7 years to keep a 3-way lifestyle, it was quite exhausting. So it's quite nice that now we're just dividing ourselves between Kosovo and the UK.
That is quite a switch. We initially connected on, I believe, one of the Expat in Tirana Facebook groups.
Yes, which I'm still a member of because there's still plenty that's useful to learn about.
I was in China for a number of years and there are a bunch of groups I'm still in there, even though I don't have any plans to go back. But there's community that you build up that you don't want to leave just because you're geographically not there.
Yeah, exactly.
So 65 countries in many different regions. How about languages? What languages do you use?
Well, I've got some kind of exam or proficiency in 6 languages, but it's not like I feel at all confident in quite a lot of them because some of those exams were a while ago. But so as well as native English, my French is not bad because of having lived in Belgium and in Algeria. So I can read French quite well and I can understand French reasonably. And then when I start to speak French, out comes Albanian now because Albanian is... Yeah, that's a bit weird. I think Albanian has now just become sort of foreign language. So when I try to speak a foreign language, that's what comes out. And my Albanian is pretty much fluent now. I work as a translator. And so, of course, I'm still learning and pretty much every day there's a new thing and I'm sure I make mistakes, but I'm completely functional in Albanian. And then I learned Serbian. I did the basic level exam in Serbian when I was living in Kosovo, when we first moved to Kosovo. And then having learned Albanian and Serbian, I was really interested in Turkish, which is one of the languages that both of those borrow a lot from. And so I did my basic level exam in Turkish a few years ago. In fact, I did that on the bus when I was traveling back and forth between Kosovo and Albania, which was a sort of 5-hour journey one way every week. So that was like 10 hours on the bus. So I did various language learning with headphones during that time. So that's how I managed to get my Turkish. And then before that, when I was in school, as a young adult, I did Italian as in evening classes. When I was at university, I learned Esperanto, which was just kind of for fun. And the British GCSEs, which was the exam you do kind of age 16, they were just phasing that out for Esperanto. So I was told if I wanted to get a qualification, then this was like my last year. So I studied for the Esperanto GCSE exam.
I didn't realize they had that for Esperanto. That's
well, they don't anymore. That was the last year. So
why did they take that away?
I guess there are not so many people speaking Esperanto.
Okay, that's quite a mouthful. So maybe we should focus on the Albanian with some questions about Serbian and Turkish too. Maybe kind of center it around there. You learned in order Albanian, then Serbian, then Turkish?
Yes, exactly. Serbian, because obviously that's used a lot in Kosovo. It's one of the official languages in Kosovo. And there is a minority of people who have that as their first language. So it felt like it was right to be able to speak that. And then Turkish is also an official language in Kosovo, but only in a few municipalities. So I think Kosovo is one of only 3 countries in the world that has Turkish as an official language. So there's Turkey itself, there's Cyprus, and there's Kosovo.
And what was your initial motivation for learning Albanian in the first place?
Wherever I go, especially if I'm planning to live there, but even if I just go on holiday, then of course you want to be able to talk to people. And people are very appreciative of that, I think, with Albanian, far more than with other languages, which are more widely spoken because so few people speak Albanian that are foreigners, that I think people, it makes even more of a bond. People see it as even more of a sign of respect. And so opened up all kinds of friendships and chances to get to know people and chances to understand the country. So yeah, I knew that I would learn Albanian when we knew we were moving there.
Sure. Did you start learning before you moved here?
Well, my partner was offered the job and 10 days later, our house was packed up. And then 10 days after that, we were there. So it was 20 days. So I said, okay, I'm going to learn one word a day. So I arrived in Kosovo speaking 20 words of Albanian.
Do you remember what those 20 words were?
Yes. So what do I remember? Well, I tried to be strategic about working through what I knew I would be doing. So I was like, okay, we're going to be arriving in the evening. So I need to learn good evening is going to need to be my very first word. And then we're going to need to get to the hotel and then we're going to need to say hello and thank you, whatever. And then I remember sort of the 20th word I learned was I was working out, okay, I'll have then got to breakfast and I'll need to go down to the hotel restaurant and I'll need to ask for orange juice. So I remember orange juice was word number 20.
As you were learning the language, did your initial ideas about Albanian culture or the Albanian people or what have you change as you understood more of the language?
I mean, I think language is definitely a way into people, whatever language and whatever people. Probably that's not so obvious in the very beginning. It's more when you're learning some of the sort of subtleties of the language that you start to see what the untranslatable bits are or what the peculiarities are. And Albanian is a really fascinating language because it's on its own branch of the Indo-European tree of languages. So it doesn't have any languages like it, although it does have a lot of borrowed words. And one of the features, which is not unique, but it's very rare, is the admirative case of verbs, which is what's used for, sorry, actually the admirative, I think, is unique. Sorry. It's the optative, which is not unique because I know it exists in Greek as well, but it's the optative that I think is really interesting as a way into some of the most important bits of the Albanian kind of psyche, or the things the most significant things that you might say to somebody, because the optative is what you use for blessings and also for curses. So the optative is what you use when you sneeze and somebody says they wish you shëndet, which is health, which is the response to a sneeze. But in Albanian, I don't know if it's the only language, but I haven't come across any others that then have a required response from the sneezer. So not just a required response from the people with them. So you sneeze, somebody says shëndet, and then you say shëndet patch, which means may you have health. So you both wish each other health, which, I mean, in these times of pandemic, it's sort of like showing how stuff spreads. It's quite interesting approach. If someone sneezes, actually you both need to be wished good health, not just the sneezer. And yeah, the same optative is used for all kinds of other little kind of tics. So if you have your hair cut, then you're told to, like, may it be with good health for you. Or if you buy something to wear, then you'll be told exoft, like, may you enjoy it. If you tell somebody your name, they will say exoft, which is a slightly different form of the same verb, sort of means may you enjoy that name. I once had some amazing boots and a friend saw them and she said eşküvşen, I think I've said that right, which means may they rip. And I didn't understand why. It seemed quite a mean thing to be saying. And then she explained that that meant may they rip before you die. Like, they're lovely boots, but may you outlive them, which is a kind of a nice message. And then there's, of course, those are all the blessings, but then it's the same optative that you use for curses. So all of the swear words phrases use may you do whatever. So it's an important part of grammar to understand these really deep running parts of people's conversation. And then the admirative, which, like I said, is, I think, unique to Albanian, is the other weird case, or weird at least to a non-Albanian speaker, which has, it has two uses, but one of them is to convey that you don't have a piece of information firsthand, that you are getting this at second hand, which is really quite an important case, actually, and one that we could probably all, in these days of fake news, it would be good to know, like, when you're really sure and when you're just reporting something you've been told. But it's also used to sort of show astonishment of something. So you use it if you're saying wow for good or for bad. Those are the kinds of details that you don't learn those in your, probably not even in your first year of learning a language, but when you do get into them, then you feel like you're really understanding some kind of secret parts of a mentality.
That admirative one, where your admirative aspect, where you're talking about where you got the source of the information, is that similar to like reported speech in English, where you're talking about, like, he said, she said kind of thing?
Yes, but you just don't need to say that he said, she said. So if you would just, I might say to you, pas que ardia, which means like, so if I said que ardia, this would mean you came yesterday. But if I said pas que ardia, that means like, I gather that you arrived yesterday. I don't have that for sure, but somebody told me that you arrived yesterday.
So. I see. So it doesn't necessarily direct it towards a specific source.
No. Where there's no fear,
I'm going to pop in here with two quick language announcements to try to help you with your language learning process. One is for German and two is for any language. So, one, German Uncovered. You've heard me talk about German Uncovered course before. And I'm back talking about it because it is a fantastic course. I haven't finished it yet. In full disclosure, I think I stopped at about chapter 7 or 8 when we had to leave Germany due to visa issues, not due to anything nefarious. German Uncovered is a fantastic course. The whole point of this course is that it's story-based. You've got a 20-chapter story of these teenagers going to Germany to experience the language and the culture, and there is a bit of mystery and intrigue in the story as well. You've got everything online. You've got videos that talk about the cognates to help you transfer your knowledge of English over to German. You've got videos on grammar, vocabulary, oh, and so much more. And it's so easy to get motivated by the movement of the story itself, and it kind of honestly, even just in 7 or 8 chapters, I felt myself getting pulled into the story and forgetting the grammar and doing things perfectly and just wanting to know what happens at the end of the story. German Uncovered is the name of the course. I'll have an affiliate link for you in the show notes, as well as on stefffuccio.com/geopatslanguage. The second announcement is from Online Language Exchange, and they're going to tell you all about it themselves.
Hi, everyone. Join us at the Online Language Exchange. We host events for language learners to practice and improve their target language with native speakers. The events are well-structured, fun, friendly, and great for conversational practice. You are placed in small groups of 2 to 6 people. You speak 10 minutes of your language, 10 minutes of your target language. Then you move to a different group with new people. We usually have over 130 participants attending from all over the world, with languages including English, Spanish, French, German, Italian, Portuguese, Japanese, Arabic, Mandarin, Russian, Irish, and sometimes more, depending on who participates on the day. All levels are welcome to join. There is no admission fee, but participants can contribute if they wish. So if you're looking to practice your target language in real conversations with real people, join our online language learning community. The event takes place every Wednesday. For more information on time zones, how to connect, check out our Facebook and Insta pages at Online Language Exchange.
So hopefully these two tools will help you with your own language learning process. I'm just a kind of suit of a helping
work of art. As you were learning the language, were there any cultural insights that you got that surprised you, either pleasantly or otherwise? Probably more so pleasantly.
I think the thing I enjoyed, I mean, it's a slightly geeky thing to enjoy, but there's this gender within, so obviously, like many languages, Albanian divides words into masculine and feminine, but there seems to be the remnants of a kind of neutral gender, because there's a whole group of words which masculine in the singular and then become feminine in the plural. So they sort of have this strange chimera kind of status. And lots of those words are the really elemental words of the language. So the words like water and wax and fat and cheese. So things that you can imagine have really come down from a very, been handed down through many generations of the basics. And I kind of like learning things like that so that you get to, you feel like you're part of a very long tradition of saying these words.
That's interesting. Yeah, because in English, a lot of words go from like female singulars to plural male. So, but in Albanian, there is also the opposite. Hurrah. Okay. From someone who's only been here about a month, one of the first things people mentioned about not just at language, but people expressing themselves was the yes and no being opposite. But from what I've seen so far, the yes is not an exact left to right know that we would do in English. It's more of like a, of course, kind of head. It's hard to do this audibly, but sort of like if you're shrugging and you tilt your head at the same time, this seems to be what I'm seeing more of. Am I correct on this at all? Because I have very limited sample right now.
I think it gets more and more emphasized the further south you go. So this issue of, as you say, people will say that you nod for no and you shake for yes, but in Kosovo, that's not always the case. And even in Tirana, it's not always the case. But the further south, it does seem to get more and more obvious. And I think the best way to sort of to see it is if somebody responds to a genuine yes-no question that you really don't know the answer, and they don't say a word with it, then that really tests what your instinct is to how they reply. And it's certainly very obvious sometimes that this is not just a tilt, or this is not just, but you know, this is exactly what a British person would be doing to say no, but they are meaning yes. And I'm now started in just using thumbs up and thumbs down as I speak, because I realize that I must be giving off very confusing signals. So I always do that when I'm speaking with somebody I don't know. I kind of reinforce it with
and that has the same meaning then. That's not opposite.
Yeah, although actually in Kosovo, the PDK party, which is one of the governing parties, the thumbs up is their kind of, particularly Hashim Thaçi, the former president's, what's his kind of gesture. So people, it now has a slightly political kind of connotation if you give the thumbs up, which is not necessarily what I intend.
For the Albanian spoken and used in Kosovo versus in Albania, is, I imagine there's regional differences or dialectical differences. Are they very different or moderately different?
If you go right to the south of Albania and then compare that with Kosovan Albanian, there it can really be very different, and enough to have people really struggling to understand one another. But I mean, it is the same language. The two dialects are the Geg dialect in the north and the Tosk in the south. And one of the biggest differences is that Geg has an infinitive. And the infinitive is used to form the past and the future in Geg. Whereas in Tosk, they don't have an infinitive, and so they form the future and the past in different ways. And so that can make actually a huge difference. So for example, I will go in Geg, in Kosovo, that would be kam me shku. Whereas in Tosk, in Albania and in the south, it would be do të shkoj. So wow. In those three words, there are only three letters, in fact, that are shared. Do të shkoj, kam me shku. I mean, in fact, the rule about how you use them is really simple. Once you've learned it, you can kind of be bilingual between those. But that's just one example. And then, of course, there are many, many vocabulary differences, particularly Albanian, because of its history in Albania, has absorbed a lot of Italian words, both for nouns, but also verbs and adjectives, like the word for car and the word for blue, which is makina and blue, for example. Whereas in Kosovo, you would say ker for car and you would say kalter for blue. So a totally different word. And then in its turn, Kosovo has absorbed a lot of Serbian words, because for the last three generations, Kosovo has been part of Yugoslavia, or has been struggling not to be part of Yugoslavia, and so has had that Serbian connection. And so the lexical differences can be quite confusing. And even for basic things like the word for pen or the word for a tissue, Kleenex. So kind of quite common nouns that you might need to ask for quite often are quite different. And genuinely, people, it's incomprehensible. People just don't know that word for it. And so I quite often ran into that. And especially because quite a lot of my work's been with children. And so children generally have one word for one thing, rather than it's only later that they develop a wider vocabulary. So yeah, it is quite tricky. And the language was only unified in 1972. So, and I think that's really worth remembering. I mean, that's the year before I was born. And so it's only basically within my lifetime that this has been considered to be a unified language, which is why there isn't very much consensus about what is right and wrong. Unlike in English, where there's a whole worldwide industry based on what correct grammar is and what an IELTS score looks like and what what materials can be used to teach the third conditional or whatever. And Albanian really doesn't have any of that paraphernalia, because it's still, people often look at me when I say something, and I can tell that I've not got it quite right, but they're definitely not correcting me. They just think, must be from a different village, you know, because I'm educated and they know I've got a university education, and they feel that they haven't. Perhaps they assume that I'm right and that they're wrong, because there's a lot of uncertainty about what correct means in terms of Albanian grammar. So that's another reason why actually learning Albanian is quite easy, because it's not like you falling into mistakes that would be very easily identified in mm-hmm. English as mistakes. As people are like, okay, I understand what you're saying, it's not how I'd have put it, but you know, we can get along.
And I've noticed that language flexibility from the get-go here is, I've been in some countries where people will just try to communicate no matter what they do, whether it be hand gestures or drawings or different words, different languages, and some places where they're like, no, you have to speak this language perfectly before I understand you. And in the first day or two here, I was just like, this is amazing. Like, anything that needs to be used, we're using. And because I have like two words in Albanian and they have a lot more English, and we both of us kind of recognize Italian. So I've just, in simple transactions, there were different things that we were doing, but things always got done. on, and they were always super nice about it. And I was like, this is amazing. That kind of language flexibility is beautiful.
I think also that so many Albanians have had experience of living and working abroad. So even if probably not in an English-speaking country, but Albanians from Albania will have been in Italy or Greece, and people from Kosovo will have been in Germany or Switzerland, and sometimes in the UK. And so people have had that experience of having to get by in a foreign language. So that gives you a tolerance and a flexibility for when other people are struggling.
And you had mentioned your work with children. Can you tell us more about that? Because from what I heard last night in an interview I was listening to, you went from possibly teaching one student to teaching a whole classroom full of like 20-some students.
Yeah, and I think we've now got over 600 kids into school now. Wow. So, yeah, I'm the co-founder of the Ideas Partnership, which is charity non-profit that works in Kosovo. And I'm a teacher by training. But as you say, it wasn't that I set out to through the Ideas Partnership to do a particular project or to do this project on education. But just by chance, I met this one girl who was 9 at the time and who wanted to go to school, and the school wasn't allowing her to come because they said she was too late to register, that after the age of 9, you'd missed your chance. And so I was battling to try to change that ruling, because clearly in Kosovo and the constitution, in terms of children's rights, of course, they have the right to education until the age of 16. But I also wanted to teach her and get her to be able to fit in the classroom. And then, as you say, she said, can my friends come? And then before we knew it, we had this classroom full of kids. And that was 10 years ago, but we've now continued the work in Fushkosov, which is the suburb of Pristina where that girl lived. And we're now in 3 other municipalities as well. And in fact, we've expanded our projects to, as soon as we got to know the community, we learnt all kinds of other needs, including very high child mortality. So we now have a newborn maternal health program. We also have a kindergarten, and not just support for school kids. We support adults who want to go back to education, whether that's with basic literacy or going to high school or evening classes to get their high school diploma or whatever. So we've now got really quite a large, rich sort of portfolio of ways of helping people to help themselves out of that poverty. But yes, it has meant that almost all of my work now is with people who are not formally educated, and so don't have English, but also don't have necessarily grammatical Albanian. And it's mixed in with bits of Serbian and Turkish and bits of Roma language as well, because some of these families are from the Roma community. And so it's definitely enriched my vocabulary and forced me to get better at Albanian.
It's still just children that you're teaching now, those 600?
Well, 600 children we've got into the school, but our center, our biggest center, which is in Fushkosov, we have about 300 people who come through the doors every week. And so most of those are children, but also we have these mums literacy classes, and I also run a social enterprise. So there are 12 women who are employed through that, and they earn money from the sales of greetings cards and purses and bookmarks and bags and things they make, but on condition that their children go to school. So we're trying to break this cycle where those kids more often were going out through the rubbish, collecting garbage for recycling, or they were begging. And so they weren't in school. And so, of course, then when they grow up, they don't have the qualifications to be able to do anything else. And their own kids could then go through the garbage and go out begging. So we're trying to break that by using those women as the agents for change in their families and in their communities.
Speaking of bookmarks, you are also a writer and an avid reader. I'm laughing because there's so many different aspects of your life that fit into so many of my different podcasts that I'm just like, ah! So yes, you are a writer. You have 6 books. Is that correct?
Yeah, 5 books. Yeah, 5 I'm working books. On the 6, but 5 of them.
Oh, that was it. I was mentally thinking about it. Is there a language component or a language thread that runs through all of the books?
Well, my first book is called Travels in Blood and Honey. The subtitle is Becoming a Beekeeper in Kosovo. So on my first birthday in Kosovo, I was given this beehive as a gift. And so through that, I learned how to make honey and how to look after the bees. But also I got to know a lot of these traditions of the villages and got to learn the rhythms of the land. And it got me out of the capital and into a very more traditional part of Kosovo. So it was a really transformational present. It wasn't not just because of the honey, but because of the experiences it led to. And so my book describes that experience. But each chapter, I identified one or two words that I had learnt in the course of what I narrated in the chapter. And so each chapter has the beginning, just like the focus, new word, and then most of them in Albanian, but a few Serbian words, because as I was starting to learn Serbian. So that's also something that my love of language, I suppose, was flagged up there. And lots of people who've read the book have told me they really enjoyed feeling like they were being educated by just learning a new word every chapter. And I have a podcast myself with my partner, Rob, called Coffee in the Accursed Mountains, which is about life and culture with stories from Kosovo and Albania and Montenegro, which are the countries around these so-called Accursed Mountains. That's the name of the mountain range. And so in A Coffee in the Accursed Mountains, in each episode, we identify, you know, what's the word of this episode, because we could see that people enjoyed just that bit of learning about a culture through its vocabulary.
Absolutely. Yeah. I found your podcast the first week that I was here when I started getting obsessed with mountain tea. And I've been trying to find the northern version, because the southern version is the one with the yellow leaves, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So I've been drinking that obsessively. I've now got my husband hooked on it, and we not only make it, but we cook it. We leave it on the, because one of the waitresses told us if you actually cook it and leave it on the stove on low heat for a long time, the flavor comes out more. So we'll leave it on the stove all day and just keep adding hot water to it. So we literally cook it all day, and I'm obsessed with it. But I want to try the northern one at some point. Is there a huge difference between the two taste-wise?
Yeah, completely. It's an entirely different flower. So the southern one is this plant called sideritis, and the northern one is marjoram, basically, or oregano that you would, as you call it in America. So the flavor is very different, but both delicious. And I think people make all kinds of claims for both kinds of mountain tea, for being good for your immunity and being good for chest complaints and for balancing your hormones. And I think I've read elsewhere, so not just about the tea, but in general, that marjoram or oregano is good for skin. So definitely the women up in the mountains have the most beautiful skin, and well after the age that down in the towns, it's everybody's getting wrinkly. They have this wonderful, I think it's worth drinking for that.
So going back to books for a second, you do also read in multiple languages. Is that correct?
Well, I try to have a few books on the go at any one time. I try to have some poetry and a book, a sort of trashy novel and a kind of good literature. And then I've usually got one on Kindle and one on audio as well. And I always try to have one in a foreign language as well. And generally that's Albanian, although occasionally I read French books, but Albanian is, it's really useful for me to be building that. This year I have read far less because of the pandemic. I was doing a lot of my reading on as I was traveling and haven't been doing that traveling. But last year I read 57 books, and 7 of them were Albanian. And that's definitely a record. So I felt very proud of that.
Are any of your books written in or translated into Albanian?
No, one of them is being translated, but I don't know, it's taking quite a long time, so I'm not sure when it'll be out now. My second book is called Edith and I, On the Trail of an Edwardian Traveller in Kosovo. And it's about Edith Durham, who is a British woman, who was a British woman from 100 years ago, who is very well known in Kosovo and Albania. There are schools named after her and roads named after her, and she was the first woman to appear on a Kosovan stamp. But in England, no one has heard of her. So it's a very strange situation that you have somebody who is British but is not known in her own country. And I wanted to follow the journeys that she made at the turn of the 20th century around Kosovo and Albania, and then compare what my experiences were with hers. And so there is a publishing house who've started to translate that, but it's been going on for some time. So it might be a while before it comes out in Albanian.
Do you think you'll ever want to write a book in Albanian, as you're writing it at first, not just translating it afterwards?
Yeah, I definitely haven't got to that stage yet. I used to have a column in the Pristina Insight, which is the English language newspaper in Kosovo, published by BIRN, the Balkan Investigative Reporting Network. And that had to be done in English and Albanian because they have an Albanian language version. And so I was always kind of daring myself to write it first in Albanian. But I think possibly the more important it is to you to communicate carefully, the more likely it is that you will want to write in your native language, because there you've got the most flexibility. You've got the widest vocabulary. English anyway has a wider vocabulary than Albanian does. So I think it sort of feels like trying to dance with your feet tied together. Why would you do that when you can write exactly what you mean and then you can work out how to say it in a different language? But it would be nice. I had my first dream in Albanian just over a year ago. So, I mean, that took me 12 and some years to get. So maybe my next goal is to write something in Albanian first. I mean, emails and those kinds of things, of course, I write in Albanian first. But when you're wanting to choose your words really carefully and get your message really honed, like I do in my books or in a newspaper article, then I don't know, it hasn't worked for me yet to do it in Albanian first.
When you're using English and when you're using Albanian, do you feel differently in the different languages?
Definitely. Well, people say that I talk much faster in Albanian, which is interesting, I guess, because I think Albanians talk faster. And I do love, like when I've been in England for a while, yesterday I ran a whole day of training in Albanian all day on Zoom. So I guess nowadays I'm actually using a lot of Albanian, even when I'm in the UK. I remember there being times when I'd been in the UK for a stay and I hadn't spoken Albanian at all in that time. And then just getting to the airport and doing those first bits of communication with the border officials or with taxi drivers or whatever, just enjoying the feel of it in my mouth that it was back to something that felt comfortable. So I guess there's a thrill in using the language, yeah.
There's always some words, it seems, that are more suitable or more specific or more apt for a situation or a thing than in some languages than in others. Are there any Albanian words that you tend to use even when you're speaking in English? You'll slip into that word because it just exactly fits that thing?
Yeah, definitely. Although, like I said earlier, English has a wider vocabulary than Albanian does, mainly because English borrows from so many languages and Albanian has borrowed a lot less. There are some places where Albanian has a wider range of options. And the one that often comes up for me is words for support. And in English, we don't really have more than one way of saying support. And I talk about support a lot because of the work of our nonprofit. And so I'm constantly asking people for support or thanking them for their support and often in Facebook posts, which I quite often do in two languages. And in English, as I say, we can just say support, which comes, I guess, from that the idea of being something from underneath the sup. And Albanian has two words, one of which is mbështetje, which does have this sense of a kind of vertical for being supported from beneath. But it also has the word përkrahje, which literally breaks down as being by your arm. So it's kind of like shoulder-to-shoulder support. And I really like the fact that there's the idea is, I'm not sure that there is a difference in the usage between the two, but one could sort of see that sometimes you're supported by somebody actually holding you up, and sometimes you're supported by someone who's there at your side.
I never thought of that before, but there are those differences, but we don't have that distinction.
So yes, I really like the flexibility to do that. And then I think a word that I do use quite often, just because I love the sound of it, in fact, it's a Turkish word, but it's been taken into Albanian, is kalabalık, which is such a nice word to say, which just means a lot of people or a crowd, or you could use it on the roads. You could say that there's a lot of traffic. And so, yeah, this one is a nice word to say.
That is a fun one to say. That's a nice mouthfeel. Kalagaluk, is that it? Kalagaluk. I like that. Kalagaluk. I heard years and years ago when I lived in Vietnam, I heard from somebody who was a native French speaker that there was this word that meant like if you're done eating, like you're full, but you want one more bite just because the flavor is so good. There's a word for that in French and we don't have that in English. And I don't know French at all, but the fact that that existed, I was like, that tells you something about the cuisine.
Yeah, great.
So I think that the different support vocabulary tells you something about Albanian culture as well.
Definitely, yeah. And the sort of solidarity that there is in different families.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Where can people find you online? What's the best place for them to go?
So my website is a good one-stop shop. So that's elizabethgowing.com. And there's the link to our podcast, A Coffee in the Accursed Mountains. There's also a page with information about my books, and you can buy the books from there. And there's also links to the work of our charity, the Ideas Partnership, which is on there. But I'm also on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And so it's always nice to join up with people in those places too.
Thank you so much to Elizabeth for taking the time to have this conversation about languages. It was so interesting to have this conversation with her when I first got to Albania, and to listen to it again while I was editing it for this. It was fun to hear, my own impressions of the language a few months later. Thank you also to German Uncovered and Online Language Exchange for the information about those two wonderful resources for learning languages. Finally, thank you to Damon Castillo, who is the voice that you're hearing in all of the music that has been on this episode so far. Stick around. The full song will be at the end of this episode in just a minute. This episode is brought to you by StephFuccio.com, where I offer custom podcasting services and podcast consulting services. Again, you can go to StephFuccio.com, StephFuccio, for more information on that. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our second episode focusing on the Albanian language. This is so exciting. All right, bye. Ain't it sad that you've never seen just how beautiful life can be? In fact, if I had to make a call, I'd say you never seen yourself at all. Just a flaw here and a flaw there when you're standing in your underwear. Girl, you don't have to buy anything. Confidence has always been free. But I can see you alone in a room, wearing nothing but some sweet perfume. That's why I'm here if you so choose to lose your body blues. Well, you're so hot and you don't even know it. Girl, I love what you got. Gonna teach you to show it. If you're done with the lies, see yourself through my eyes. You paid your dues. Say goodbye to your body blues. Well, I know that you wanna be free from the shackles of the bourgeoisie. And as a working man, I have to propose. You leave the prison of your pretty clothes. That's why I'm here if you so choose to lose your body blooms. Well, you're so hot and you don't even know it. Girl, I love what you got. Gonna teach you to show it. If you're done with the lies, see yourself through my eyes. You paid your dues. Say goodbye to your body blooms. Yeah, there's no fear, 'cause I'm sincere of heart.